Hello and welcome to Bluebells Forever, a podcast with interviews of Bluebell dancers past and present. Join Sherry Lewis, a Bluebell herself, as she leads us on a journey through story and experience. And now here's Sherry.
Thank you for listening to Bluebells Forever podcast. We truly appreciate you listening to this. And we'd love that it is a worldwide community of people that were in the shows, people that are curious about the shows. And it matters to those of us in the show that we preserve this well. And so hearing these stories from the people who lived it is very important than just someone giving a history lesson. So besides the podcast, there is a book that is out on Amazon, which I have taken 84 of the interviews and condensed them down and then included incredibly beautiful photos of these performers in their glory days, as well as set designer and costume designers, wardrobe, singers. There's great stories in this book as well as here in the recording, but if you'd like it as a permanent keepsake on your coffee table, and this book is almost as big as a coffee table, it's huge, and it's because of all the beautiful photos. So that is on Amazon.com, and there's a digital version and a print version. So you could look out for that if you'd like to have yours as a keepsake. And also, if you'd like to help the podcast out, it really helps if we get review and rated and then share it with friends. We just want more people to know about us and to have this history live on even after we're long gone. So if you wouldn't mind doing a review on iTunes or Spotify, it would be truly appreciated. And now enjoy this next interview.
So I get to interview Bex. I called you British Bex because of Instagram, but it's Bex O'Hara. And we will all find out you're British, but as soon as you speak. But thank you for saying yes to this, because I have this trip to Vegas coming up in April, and I had interviewed Dita Von Teese, and I've always looked up to her, and then seeing this Vegas show and seeing a little controversy within our Bluebell community, you know, of who gets to call themselves showgirl and all that. And I go, I want to hear her story. I really want to hear her bridge between the two, and also what it's like to be on stage wearing these gorgeous costumes on this theater that when Jubilee closed, you know, like it's like, we're going to talk about Follies too. The ghosts that still live in these theaters. So I was like, what is it like to be in her show? And then to find out you're in Follies. So those are the two things I'm coming down for in Vegas, is I'm going to see Dita's show and Missy Follies. And they really represent something on the spectrum of the showgirl, interviewing like Anna Bailey, the first African-American showgirl on the strip. And she's 97. And that woman is bright and full of life. And she's putting her heels on and getting on stage.
Yeah.
And then you, because we'll talk about your whole trajectory, that was in Jubilee, that was on that stage, and then to be back in Dita's show and to be at Follies at the same time. I'm like, I'm not sure. And you have two children. I just got to meet your beautiful daughter, Bella, and you're juggling all this. I'm curious how this is happening at the same time.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah. So this is going to be fun, because like, we barely talked about, let's just see where this goes, because I'm going to get, I don't know if I'm going to get to see you in both shows when I'm there, but.
No, I do have to take the week off of Dita, because obviously I'll be in Follies. So I know I was thinking that, I was like, unfortunately you won't see me over there, but you'll see me in Follies. And there's no other way. We have like a rehearsal Wednesday. We have a show at Dita. Which show are you going to for Dita?
I am the 13th. I think that's Saturday.
Right. Yeah. So
you'll be in a show.
I'll be over at Follies for that. But yeah, so you won't see me over there, unfortunately. But you know, it was like when I'd signed my contract with Dita, I already had Follies. So they honored the fact that I was doing Follies. So they let me take that week off of Dita when I joined the cast. So
I'm just so interesting how your brain even flips between the two. And I think it's, you're living the thing that this podcast is so much about. Mm-hmm. Is that, because I've interviewed people in their 80s, I've interviewed people in their, well, the last ones at the Lido were like some in their 20s, and that the reunion, to see this span and the history that we hold, and to see the Lido close, but to go, no, there are still things happening, keeping this alive. And it's through our stories, it's some of these shows coming back. And I think people are hungry for it. I think when it went away, we went, well, that can't be. We have to preserve it through story. There's the Showgirl Museum. There's just so many things that we were like feeling like that we want to tell our story with honor. I feel like it's kind of gets cheapened when it, the further it gets away, what people think it was.
Yes.
It's like, oh, hell no. Let's tell our real stories.
Exactly, exactly. And especially here in Vegas with, you know, the strip show girls, it's so terrible that we often get painted with the same brush. I mean, and, you know, that's the worst mistake that anybody could ever make is ask if you're one of the showgirls on the strip. You're like, what? With my years of training, you can't tell. I'm wearing fishnets for one thing.
My booty's not hanging out, and I'm not walking in sneakers.
Sneakers, yeah. Oh my god! And this is like a real costume, so it's so total. But which is another funny thing. We actually shot a movie, which I can't obviously say too much because it's not been released yet. We were just extra work, but we were all four of us that were doing it are real showgirls, but we were playing the strip showgirls, and we had this aha moment that we were like, oh look, we're strip showgirls, like pretending to be like we're real showgirls pretending to be strip showgirls pretending to be us.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, wait, that's so full circle.
Wow, it's like Victor Victoria. I'm a woman pretending to be a man pretending to be a woman.
Well, exactly.
So where did you grow up? I know you've got your British accent, and like, how did dance come into your life? And also, like, I like to throw in there, what kind of kid were you?
So I grew up in Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, the southwest of England, in the Cotswold area. And my mother, well, first she put me into gymnastics at like 2, and then I guess I didn't really like it, so she put me into dance at 3, and that's where you know, I bloomed, and mum was like, okay, that this is where she needs to be. I was a very energetic child, running around and you know, playing in the dirt and outside and on my bikes with and my dolls and everything else. And so I had 2 older brothers as well, so I was always, you know, playing with them. And you know, like every mother, she needed to get me into some activity that could burn off all the excess energy that I had. So dance it was. And I started off with ballet, and I did ballet the majority of the time. And then as I got older, we added in like tap and jazz and contemporary and things. But yes, I was always like, ballet was my first love for sure. And yeah, I loved it. Even
were you in the competition circuit? Like, I know some studios are more focused on that, some are.
Right. So it is a little different in the UK. So they're not called competitions, they're called dance festivals. And I did do dance festivals, yes. But it wasn't, again, it's difficult. It's not as, like, I guess I could say competitive. It's not like we're going to, like, especially back then, there wasn't all these big dance conventions that you would go to. And it was just you'd go to a different town and do the festival for the day and do your solos and your group numbers, and then you'd come home. Of course, because you can do that in the UK, you can literally drive to a county, like a couple of counties over, and be back the same day. Whereas obviously here with dance competitions, yeah, you can't do that. You stay. It's a much more expensive thing. So yeah, when Bella gets into the competition world, I guess I'll witness that firsthand, the cost it is to the parents' back pocket. But
well, she just popped on screen before we started in her leotard and her bun. I'm like, and she was spinning in her chair. I'm like, oh, she's spotting, she's like really good. Because I think, as you know, like my daughter, when if she wasn't hanging upside on the bar, that was a good day, because she just got all the energy too. But she ended up doing sports, even though I have a dance studio. But was there a reason that you put her in, or she wanted to be in? And also, she's probably seen you on stage since you're still performing.
Well, exactly. I think her first time in a dance studio was when she was not even 6 months old. You know, I was back in a rehearsal and she was there in the car seat, you know. So she has lived and breathed it. Her father as well, he's a performer. Well, he's an ex-performer now, but he works for Cirque du Soleil. And so as a technician now, but he was a clown.
Oh wow.
And so, yeah, so it's in her blood to perform and to be on stage. And she's a Pisces as well, so it's very much just, it's her. So yeah, I didn't even try and push it, because I didn't really want to push it. I didn't want to push myself onto her, but it was very much her decision to be a dancer, or to continue going to dance class, and she loves it. So, you know,
if she ever writes her story, because it's like in Vegas, it'll sound normal, but if she moved to like Alabama. I was raised by a clown and a showgirl. You know, right. That's
yeah.
It's like, yeah, we're made. Like, of course, that makes sense. But
that's it's definitely literally it. Yeah, that's right. That's about right. Yeah, it's just the jokes. I literally have Sean's like circus trunk next to me with my two showgirl headdresses on top of it. It's like this is our life. It's so funny. I know.
Dress up's got to be way more fun at your house than other kids' houses.
Yes. Oh, yes, it is. Indeed.
Did you know you wanted to be a professional? Because I think that's the thing I'm intrigued with everyone's story, because a lot of us, like I'm writing my story right now. I'm writing my own story instead of everybody else's. But all I knew was Carol Burnett had dancers, Ernie Flatt dancers, and they wore Bob Mackie costumes. And Sonny and Cher, I'm like, I'm going to do that. And we had Love Boat in this. There was a few things I saw, but no idea how to get there. So I'm always amazed like how we find our way. Either a teacher tells you, like what is your path that gets you from your ballet class to like, I'm going to do this for a living? Yes,
professionally. So in the UK, you can actually leave school at 16 and you can go on and work as a trade, or you can continue on for another 2 years to get your what we call our A levels, which then means you can then go on and get a degree at university or college. And so I was 16 years old and I couldn't decide what I really wanted to do. And I had just talked to my dance teacher because at that time, although I still loved dance, I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't know I was good enough, I guess I should say. And my dance teacher was like, what do you mean? Why don't you? You could totally go do this as a career. I was like, really? And so speaking to my parents, they, you know, told me to stay on at school for another 2 years to get my A-levels so that I could then go get a degree. And that's exactly what I did. Because as soon as my dance teacher, Miss Sadie, her name was, as soon as she told me that I was good enough, then that was it. It was like, okay, then that's it. And it's been a long and beautiful and incredible career that has spanned decades and continents, and and to say that I'm still here, it just like I am the luckiest person in this world.
Oh, you know, I love that. I love hearing the gratitude. I love that, because some of us are realizing after the fact that we didn't pay attention, or maybe we didn't appreciate it enough. And so I love to hear when you're in it and you appreciate it, instead of years later when you're doing a job you don't want, like, oh, remember when I used to like get paid to dance? Like,
yeah,
appreciate it when you're in it. It's gonna make it
It's a beautiful thing. And the fact that I have my two beautiful children as well, like I have my family, and yet I'm still doing it. And I know a lot of my friends have been inspired by me too, because a lot of the time I think as dancers, we always feel like, okay, so when it's time to become a parent, if that's the route that you want to take, I think a lot of people think, okay, well, I guess that's it. Now I need to, you know, stop and get a real job. And it's, if you're healthy and without injury, why not?
Yeah.
Because the gift that we have to the stage is our experience, our our growth, our style that continuously changes with age, you know, like it's a beautiful thing. So yeah, I'm really very blessed. I'm the luckiest girl. I really am.
That's amazing. Because I think it was, it's time for babies, which means you settle down or get a real job or stop working. And I'm just amazed hearing more and more people that live. I just thought at 30, you were supposed to, like people say, hang up your G-string or hang up your top hat or your rhinestones. And like so many went into their 40s and 50s, because some of those shows you can. Yeah. I mean, just hearing these stories now, I thought, oh, 30, I hope I can still walk at 30, like let alone perform.
And that's what I thought too. I honestly thought when I hit 30, that would be it. And that's when I should be retiring. But, you know, I kept going. So
we need people like you and some of the others that did it, so others can get past that mindset.
Yes.
You're probably just getting to your peak. You really know your body. You're like, know who you are. And that's when you're going to be way more interesting to watch than like the cookie cutter, like do everything you're supposed to do and
figure out
who you are later.
Exactly. That's what I believe, you know, that this, I have so much to give, so much more to give than when I was 20. So,
So when you set out for your career, did you go right from school and do it? Like, how did you?
So I graduated with a BA honors in theatre at 21 years old in London. So I trained in London under some prima ballerinas from the Royal Ballet and English National. It was a musical theatre school. So, of course, I did the whole thing. I was a well-rounded kind of dancer and toured with a jazz company with my college. And then I stayed in London for, I lived in London for 10 years. So my, I was doing... Actually, I was the first at the inaugural cast of the Showgirls at the Empire Casino in Leicester Square. They don't have that anymore, unfortunately, but that was always fun. Ironically, I never auditioned for Mulan or Lido because, which is wild, I know. I would always gig in Paris, but I never was around when the auditions were happening, or I never just managed to get over there. It was so strange. But what did happen was I did a couple of cruise ship contracts, and that's where I met my husband. And so, because he's American, and so that's how I ended up here.
Okay.
If I hadn't have met my husband, who's to say where I'd be? Probably, potentially, I would have ended up at the Lido. Who knows? But
What cruise ships did you do?
So my first cruise ship was P&O, which is a British company.
Mm-hmm.
And I did NCL. That's where I met Sean.
Okay. So Jean Ann Ryan was not.
It was Jean Ann. Yeah,
it was Jean Ann. I worked for Jean Ann in the '80s. That's what I actually interviewed her. Her span is so vast, and how many people we would credit some of our showgirl training to Jean Ann because she added that element, and so a lot of us were way more prepared for Vegas or those things. And so she was a really fast. See, I was a sea leg dancer. Like I was the '80s. Here you are, decades later.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's like I don't know how you felt about that. I just know like. They say you can save money on the ships. I never did, but I heard it was possible. But it is a great place to go have an adventure, save some money if you are able to do it.
Able to do it. I did four contracts in total. My first three contracts, I didn't save a dime. But my last contract, when I was already engaged to Sean, I saved. Because obviously I was a dancer. I wasn't dance captain actually that contract, ironically, but I was the crew enrichment officer, and I did the like art auction, and I did the jewelry. So I was just like, and the photos, like the photography, like the dressing up as the characters. So I was working, and I saved everything, and that paid for our entire wedding in England.
And
we had a castle for 3 days, rented the whole thing out.
Gosh, that's a good reason to work that hard.
Yes.
Well, now the question is, because I know so many romances on the ships and people go their own way because to get hired as a couple, it makes the next part of your career a little bit harder because now you want to hopefully work in the same country at least.
Right. Yeah.
So what did you do from there? So how did you figure out auditions and what's next?
Exactly. I mean, we did the long distance thing. What was it, for 4 years? We did long distance for 4 years.
I know. Wow. And it worked.
And it did work. And we saw each other. I don't even know how we spent a lot of money, but we saw each other every 6 to 8 weeks. So whether he was off the ship and he came to England or I came in and cruised with him. But yeah, so which was also interesting for work in London, because then I was constantly like coming back and forth. And like, I didn't really have my roots were always loose.
Right.
In London, but we made it work. Oh my God, there we go. Four years, and I just knew. I mean, it's funny. Meg Benfield, who I went to college with, who also did Jubilee, because she was actually a dual citizen. Her father's American, and she was on the Pearl before me, and she introduced Sean and I in the crew bar. And it was literally, I shook his hand, and it was like, I mean, I know it's so corny, but it is. It was electricity.
I love corny.
It was love at first sight. Literally, I was like, oh my God, this is my husband. And I knew it. It's so weird. I just knew it. And here we are, 15 years later.
Have you worked together?
No, we haven't worked together in a show. We haven't.
Okay.
But I did branch off in 2019. I started my own company, City Cats, and so he works for me in the sense of he's building my props and things like that, and he comes and helps me in do events and things that I have. So I mean, that's the most that we've ever like actually worked together, I guess.
Okay, I was gonna save this, but let's talk about City Cats now before we move on to what's next, because that I'm really intrigued of how people are expanding, not just being a performer. Yeah.
Right. So that came off of having Arabella, my daughter. So it was, again, it was like, is this the time that I hang up my G-string? Is this what's happening? So I started Z-Cats, which the name and everything is actually a show. In my head, it is actually a show, like a female version of Tap Dogs, basically. Oh. Yeah, that's the idea. I haven't done it yet, as you can tell. It's still,
you're a little busy.
It's still in the works. But I wanted to start the business, start the name, and start working into like corporate events and other kind of production, just to sort of generate the name, the brand is what my idea was. And it started off really well. Like 2019, I produced a Halloween show at The Link. And bearing in mind, Bella was at this point like 8 months old.
Oh my gosh.
So I started the company, yeah. Oh, at the beginning of her life, started the company, did like my show reels and stuff, produced a show at The Link. And then I had a big birthday party and a corporate event. And it was actually, that corporate event was the 3rd of February, 2020.
Oh, yeah, we know it's coming.
Yeah. And after that gig, we all got sick. We didn't know what it was, but we were all like, you know, like the worst flu we ever had. And then, of course, March 17th, we closed and it was COVID. So we were like, yeah. Oh, I wonder if we had COVID, which it's still never confirmed if it was, but we all went down. I'm sure it was COVID that we had at the time. But so unfortunately, COVID happened. And you know, Bella turned a year old, and so she was more active then. And then I didn't really do much during COVID as far as City Cats goes. I actually started working for a tennis company. World Team Tennis is their dance captain, and like on the dance team. And we went to West Virginia, stayed at the what's that big hotel? I can't even remember what it's called. It's a big hotel in West Virginia, like a big American hotel. Can't think what it's called. Anyway, I'm sorry, that's a terrible story. And we were there doing this like tennis tournament with, like, you know, Vanessa Williams, like all of these names, just hanging out in this bubble because it was a bubble system. So we were there for 3 weeks, just, you know, testing every third day, but not having anybody else within our bubble. Yeah, it was awesome. And just living this like random life of COVID. That was pretty awesome. But anyway, I digress. So post-COVID, City Cats is, it's mostly like showgirl gigs, birthday parties, corporate events. Unfortunately, the show that I had done at the Link, that program, hasn't come back because Caesars was bought by Eldorado and they cut a lot of money, as I'm sure you know. They cut a lot of shows in that time. And so all of those free programs, which would be The Link, Fashion Show Mall doesn't have its shows anymore. And obviously, like, you know, Treasure Island, all of those like free shows that were on the strip are no longer, which is another sad thing.
Yeah.
And I think personally that the strip is missing that like real entertainment buzz where you can just be walking down the street and see a show.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So.
Wow. Yeah. I think it's good to remember what it was like those early COVID, because I had just started my Parisian cabaret. We were like a month away from going, and just to go, and then like, when is it safe to come back? Like, it's hard to realize how we were really living. Like, I was doing virtual cabarets, and like, we found a way, but it's not that long ago to think of like, is entertainment ever going to come back?
Yeah.
And that was a scary part, or what's it going to be after going through this, and the need for it. Like, we can only watch Netflix so long, like the need, and the Tropicana, which I just found out is coming down, which goes along with Follies, which we'll get to. I did a showgirl road trip 2021 after vaccines came out, and went to the Tropicana, and it was kind of, we were singing along with the whole, I just started crying. I forgot what it was like to enjoy entertainment with other humans.
Yeah.
Like the entertainment part, but also the reciprocal and being clapping and laughing and singing with people. I could not stop crying. I'm like, oh, we are not meant to just watch TV.
No.
We need live interactive theater and the feedback when we give to the, you know, to the performers and the other way around. So Yeah, I think it's really good to realize how big a deal it is for all these things.
Yeah.
To come back. And as a performer's like, well, I guess I have to get a real job now. And then those who kept their craft alive came back with a vengeance. I feel like there's something that was like, oh yes, oh hell no, we are not diminishing this.
It's true. I think actually the fact that all of us were sat inside watching TV for so long and cleaning our houses over and over and over and over again, I think it really did make us almost want it more, or like push ourselves more, because it's true. It was just like vomit of like entertainment happened straight after. It was like the baby boom, you know?
Right.
But in entertainment, that's exactly what it was.
I love that.
That's what it felt like. I mean, I actually started working at Fantasy. So Fantasy came back at the Luxor. That actually opened up pretty soon with post-COVID. It was one of the first shows back, and how we did it was we weren't in the Atrium Theatre. We actually were in the main Luxor Theatre. People weren't allowed to sit. It was like 25 feet away from the stage.
Oh, wow.
So like literally you could barely see it, and they were all like 8 feet apart in the house. So that now that theatre is like a 1500 seat theatre, and we were only allowed 250 people in there. So it was literally like golf clapping. That's all we could. And we were like, Is there anybody out there? It was
strangest
thing.
Wow.
We were socially distant on stage, 6 feet apart on stage. Mm. We had to re-block the show. We were in these plastic masks, which was horrendous. Like, who made a plastic mask? Who made plastic masks? It's like, we can't breathe through that. Are you wild? So, what a crazy time to live through, though. What a crazy time. But we did it.
We did it, and things are back. And I think, it's just worth going pat on the back, like, you did it. Cause I think a lot of people like they just were done, you know, but I did like my cabaret. I did once a month. We just did it from our houses, and I had people from New York, and they would just pop on. Well, the first time they're just in their living room, the second month there's a curtain behind them. And then the next month they've got a microphone, and then they've got lights, and people were making their house into cabarets. And those are the people that when auditions happen, were ready to go. They were like trying new things and like, okay, we might have to learn how to work with video. And I was really impressed, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's just too sad. You know, and I understand that part. I understand both sides of it. So it is worth celebrating.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's amazing what we all managed to do.
Yeah. And well, artists, as we've learned, I talk to people my age and older that you are more adaptable than a lot of people, even just to be a dancer, move to a different country or a different city, start your life over and over and over. Like, we are adaptable.
Yes.
And to be in a show, you have to adapt. You have to work for the bigger picture. So I do think I'm always intrigued by what dancers do in their career, how they get there, but also what they do after, because the skill set of being able to pivot, nice little dance term, like metaphorically, and that it really is. And then how many times you've changed your career over. So let's actually talk about like what got you. Was Vegas your next thing?
Basically then we got married. We moved to Florida because Sean, so he started his career as a clown with Ringling Brothers, which moved him from Maine, where he's from, to Florida. So he was still based in Florida. And of course, because he'd been working on the cruise ships, he just had stayed there. So my first stop in US was Florida. So we were living in Jacksonville, Florida, only there for 6 months whilst I was waiting for my green card. But at that time, a lot of my friends from cruise ships were in Jubilee in Vegas. And I had visited Vegas before. I'd taken vacation for my 25th birthday and I'd seen Jubilee. So I knew of it. Obviously, a lot of my friends had done it. And at that time, my husband was a comedy juggler. So it seemed a dual act. And it was like, well, where do we go? Because we're not going to get work. We could get work if we moved to Orlando, for example. But I was like, where would we really like to go? And just Vegas was the next natural step for us. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, Vegas is also basically like cruise ships on land, because it seems like everybody moves from cruise ships to Vegas. Everybody, you know. hey, friends. Like, you have an instant community. So I moved here, and within that first week, and unbeknownst to me, I hadn't planned it like this, but within that first week of us living here, Jubilee had auditioned. And so I call up my friend Jamie, who had told me about it. And I was like, I don't even have a leotard. Like, I've got nothing here because I've moved here with a suitcase. That's it. That's all I've got. So she was like, don't worry, I've got you. Here's a leotard. And that was it. That was the history. I did the audition and then got booked.
How was it? Was it a mass cattle call or was it?
It was a mass cattle call. I don't even know, but God, there had to have been over 100 girls, had to have been 7 rounds, you know, across the floor, like a ballet round. Then we must have done a showgirl round. Oh gosh, I mean, this is 2012, so this is hard for me to remember, but all I remember was that there were 7 rounds. And then it was like, okay, you have to come back and do the lineup with the cast, but you have to wear like a G-string and a bra. And I was like, I don't have anything that I could wear that's, you know, like a cute G-string and bra, bearing in mind that I'm basically straight from London, right? Like, so my, you know, my audition, what I would wear to an audition is very much New York style. Like, you wouldn't wear a G-string and a bra to an audition, basically, let me put it that way. So I was like, no, I don't have anything like that. So Suzanne Swanson, the assistant company manager, she's like, don't worry, Bex, I got you here, borrow this. I was like, cool, thanks. Let me just put this on. And yeah, and it worked. I got it.
Hey, do you know, because I know like when I auditioned, it was a cattle call. I think there was 300. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until recently when I've done these interviews, there was only 3 of us that got cast. Mm. And so I was just like, oh, I'm going to Reno. I'm like, wait, there's only 3. I also was not, I didn't know how to dress, but I don't even know why, because I like what Don Arden or whoever was running your audition, there is something they're looking for. Nice training, obviously the body, there's a look, but there's something talking to Pete Menefee, like who's done the costumes, like he would sit in, like he could pick who was going to be picked by what Don Arden was looking for. Oh. Like there has to be something a little bit different. They don't want everybody to look the same, but I'm always intrigued, like out of a cattle call, like maybe you were the best dancer, maybe there is something else, but all of us that get in there, like there's 1,000 dancers that want this job and they don't just do one city. A lot of times they go several places to get what they want. Like,
yes, it's whoa. True. That same year. Sorry.
No.
That same year, I know they'd done the New York audition because people in that had come in with me came from New York. And I think they auditioned somewhere else too. Maybe it was LA. I don't know. Because Danny, I think, auditioned in LA. So yeah, but I was there. It was just me and another nude that came in. And then I think there was like 5 bluebells and one male dancer at the time that came in with us. Wow. And 3 singers.
What year was this?
This was 2012.
2012. Yeah,
2012. And for the like September contract, starting in September.
When did it switch over? Because I remember going down with the last week before it closed.
So I can't tell you when we actually closed. I left August 2014. I think we opened Frank Gatson's show like February, March 2014. So I think we must have closed like after Christmas. I can't.
So you,
really
you got to do
remember.
2 years of the original. Well, the original had been changed, and then you did the re.
And then I did, yeah. So almost. Because I was in the show total just almost 2 years, not quite 2 years. So I must have done like a year and a half original show and then 6 months of the revamp. And that's when I was like, okay, goodbye.
And I've heard very truthful stories about this because I think it's heartbreaking for a lot of people that actually got to, some people never saw the difference. They got hired after. What was it like going into the show? It's a massive show. It's very different than a cruise ship. There's things to navigate, like stairs and costumes and moving floors and swings. Cracks. And nothing is the same every night. Cracks, where your heels could get stuck.
Yes. I mean, it was a spectacle. What can I say? So our process was a month long, which is fantastic. And we would come in, we would watch the show that night from the light booth, and then we would rehearse after shows. So we would actually rehearse from like midnight to 4 a.m. That was our like process. And of course, this is coming up a lot recently. We weren't allowed to video our rehearsals, whereas now it's so funny because we record everything, and everything we learn is from video. And you know, you're practicing at home, you're practicing from a video. And I was like, remember when we didn't have this and we had to like retain.
Remember, retain.
Yeah. Imagine retaining choreography. It's like so, it's so alien now, isn't it? Which is also kind of sad. But so we weren't allowed to film anything. We had to write everything down. So, you know, we'd have like a full, I probably even have it. I should look because that would be fascinating. Like a full book of just notation and counts and numbers and everything. So it was overwhelming, but of course we had a whole month to learn it. So you did retain it in the end and you were rehearsing every day, 6 days a week. And you would watch it too. So you were watching it. So, you know, you were remembering and rehearsing then. But it was because not only are you learning the choreography, but you're learning your pattern within 100. Wait, so there was 85, was that 80? There was 85 cast members at that time when I went into the show. Yeah. So you're remembering your pattern and where you line up with these 85 cast members. You're remembering which stair you're on and you're remembering which number you're on as well, like on the stage. So, I mean, just... yeah, there's so much information. Of course you had to write it down. I couldn't imagine not writing it down, even now, even with video. But it was incredible. And in that time, we made the bestest of friends, which is another great thing, you know, coming from being an alien, a resident alien, and not really knowing anybody, knowing having a handful of friends in Vegas, you are thrown into this cast of 85 people that you're living, breathing, sleeping, eating, you know, going to the toilet with every day for 6 days a week, and you all have one day off. And what I loved about having the same dark day is that you would then go to parties and go to the pools, into the lake. You do everything together. So 7 days a week, we were with these people.
Yeah.
And although I was only in, Jubilee for 2 years, the relationships and the bonds that I made were so strong. And they are my bestest friends. And we've all been each other's bridesmaids and everything since. And one of my best friends, Catherine Schwing, I don't know if you, she, her, and so we had our babies together as well. So Bella and her daughter Charlotte are 3 weeks apart, and Finley and her son Andrew are like 4 weeks apart.
Wow.
Isn't it that
different? Like if you can work in an office for years and you might go to the water cooler or lunch together, but to be even just how much time you're backstage. Yes.
Yeah.
You're on stage, but like that, those in the acts, like that's when we would play like Pictionary or whatever and have conversations. And then you would have birthday parties. And I did Hello Hollywood a year. And if you know, like on the video thing, when you can shrink it down to one little part.
Yes.
Like on my life, Hello Hollywood's this dot, but when I expand it out, there's so many stories in that year because you're going through things together and you're away from your regular family. There's just so many things that make, when I go to the reunions and people are like, oh my, you know, just to see, when they say family, it's not used like just throwing it around. We really mean, these are the people that were there when life was hard and you don't have much outside of that life usually because everybody else is, you know, working a different, the hours were vampires and our schedule is different. And you were living a very different life than the most people, except for Vegas, everybody's vampires, I guess. But
right. It's true.
So what was that like switching to living in Vegas and your husband's there and you've got babies happening in the middle? And
I mean, so that first morning after waking up in Vegas, let me tell you, I couldn't open my eyes. Because they were glued shut because they were so dry.
Oh yeah.
I never felt anything. I was like, what is happening? I was like, oh my goodness. I could, like, it hurt so bad to open my eyes because they were just so dry. I was like, what? Oh my goodness. Because of course we moved in July. Like we moved.
And you went from summer. Florida, which is humid.
To Vegas. So that it was definitely, that first week was definitely a process, a learning process for me, and the heat also as well. Like, nothing can prepare you for that. Nothing can prepare you for that. But I just loved it. Like I especially when I joined Jubilee, you make this your family, your chosen family, and Just so much fun. And also for me, they have the international supermarket. They have great British pubs. So we would often be like after the shows, we would go to like Crown and Anchor and get a chip butty, or go to a Cornish pasty and get a pasty. Like there's so many things here that really help when you're feeling homesick. And not just obviously, and there was a bunch of Brits. I mean, I came into the cast with a British guy, a singer, and one of the female singers was also married to an Englishman as well. So even within the small group of people that I was coming into the show with, there was automatic connection. So I moved into Vegas seamlessly. And it was just a very, also another magical experience, just, coming into a new home, and it was home straight away. And meeting people straight away. I'm quite boisterous and met a group, met everybody very quickly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's when those. Have you been to a reunion yet of any sort?
Yes, a couple of Jubilee reunions at
Okay.
McMullen's. Yes, I have.
It's amazing because I didn't know I needed it in my life because I kind of shut that door until social media and then going back to the reunion going, no, this actually mattered a lot more. And to go in and like, I think it's that feeling it in your body.
Yeah.
And it's just different than this is my scrapbook, like the felt sense of what that life was just so unique.
Yeah.
So when it's starting to change, because I don't know if there was any talk that the show was going to
So,
end as we knew it, but I've heard different things from the cast members. Either there's whispers or something's coming.
okay, so this is funny. And actually, some people were angry with me because, so I went to a party and I met some friends of mine, and they told me, they said, "Hey, Bex, by the way, Julie's going to close because it's going to be revamped. We know the new choreographer." And I couldn't believe it. I was like, "What? What do you mean? We haven't been told anything." Of course, completely aghast. And they were like, "Yeah, we know the choreographer, it's happening." So of course I go back to Jubilee the next day and I tell my tall new dressing room. I was like, "Hey girls, I heard this story." And of my closest friends in the room listened, believed me, but others were kind of annoyed that I'd even come with gossip and was like claiming it to be true. And I was like, "Well, I believe them. It's come from a reliable source to me, and they're telling me firsthand that they know the choreographer." So they go and they ask Diane and Suzanne. Diane and Suzanne didn't even know about it. They didn't even know about it at this point, which
Oh,
is
wow.
just an ugly thing
Yeah.
to for them. And again, that falls upon Caesars Entertainment and the people that were in charge at that point. I'm not naming any names, but I don't know why these, like, anyway, I can't say too much because it's just negative, but sometimes I do wonder how people get to the positions that they get to. And unfortunately, we were led at this point with somebody who shouldn't have been in that seat. And so to have not told Diane and Suzanne, and yet the gossip is out in Vegas where we're going to parties and learning it, it's disgusting. It's not professional. So of course they're like, "No, this isn't happening. I don't know who's told you this. Bex is like sources are non-reliable. Like this is stupid." So, that was met, like people were kind of mad at me for sort of gossiping, which of course, yes, of course it was gossip. Maybe I shouldn't have said anything. But we're all like, "What? This is our jobs. This is our 401k, our health insurance, our livelihood. This isn't just, a gig. This is our job." And so I think, I can't remember the timeline, but a couple of weeks later, it was then announced to Diane and Suzanne, that's when it was announced to us. And so we then found out when our closing date was going to be, which I can't remember for the life of me what it was. It must have, I mean, I would have thought we would have done New Year's Eve, so maybe it was like in January. I can't remember. But I do remember our first meeting with Frank, and we come into the he wants to give us his presentation, and he does it in the theater with the projection, and he's like walking us through act by act, scene by scene, the show. And I can only tell you, it was definitely met with 50-50. 50 people thought it was really cool, and 50 people, which included me, was just jaw dropped. Is this man stupid? What? And I had to say at that point, I couldn't blame him because he doesn't know. He's worked with Beyonce doing tours. He doesn't understand production, show, where you have a cast of 85 people, where you have multiple principals, not just one. You have different lines, tall nude, short nude, tall bluebell, short bluebell, boys, like singer lines, like you have specialty acts, all of this stuff. Like he doesn't understand it. And his team that he brought in didn't understand it. Again, yes, that was his fault. He should have done his research. He should have been like, who would be the best person on my team? That's a good thought. But really, who I blame, again, of course, is the person that was in that seat at the time that was like, who should we get to re-choreograph and redirect Jubilee? I know this man because he's worked with Beyonce, so that's going to do us good. Like, not considering the value of production and show business as a show. So he gives us this rundown where, you know, it's now becoming a storyline based around Miss Jubilee, this central character, and she loses her showgirl powers, and then she goes on this journey to find her showgirl powers again, and somehow the Titanic is worked in there, and then somehow Samson and Delilah is worked in there. And then he's like, and I'm going to get this car, like a Lamborghini or something. I can't remember what make of car it is. Like, you know, Beyonce is going to lend me her car, and she's going to drive on stage in it. But, you know, and then she's going to have this rebirth. So we're going to make this giant stripper pole, and she's going to be reborn at the beginning of the show, sliding down the stripper pole. And you did see the Frank Gadsden version, right?
No, I came the week before it closed, and I didn't see that one. I wanted to, and I could not. I felt like I'd be too sad.
Oh my gosh. It was just, and then act two. So they then added this contemporary number, when I'm like, okay, this is cool to add different styles, right? Okay, let's do contemporary. Okay, that's for sure. But, you know, you have to think about the production value in sense of costume. Now, you can't put, so they put us in this like brown, khaki, chiffon, like dress, floaty dress, and it was like a thrashy kind of contemporary number. But you've put that next to opening with pink and orange and rhinestones, feathers, sequins, glitter, sparkle, set pieces, stairs, all of this exuberant magic, and then you put us in front of the black curtain.
Ooh, on a giant stage.
On a giant stage. And there was only like 6 or 8 of us in that number. I honestly, and again, I can't tell you what the idea or like why did we do that? What was the sense of, I don't know what the storyline was at this point.
Miss Jubilee went to dance class.
It was just the craziest, like his through story. And then, of course, it gets lost in like at the end of the show. Hi, babes. I know, darling. I'm almost done, okay? You want to come sit on my lap? I know. I knew we're in your bedroom. I'll be in there in a bit, okay, darling? I promise. Sorry.
No, this is well, what was the morale like? Because I think, like, I've been in shows like, is this bad? And you don't know. And then people come to the show like, oh, it's bad. But you knew when you're doing it that this was like, how did you guys, how was it backstage?
I mean, we were crying, of course. It was awful. It was awful. But what we had is we had each other. Mm. And we got through it together, quite frankly.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard that. I'm sorry.
Did.
Okay.
Wow, that is so pretty, Bella. She's got hot pink sparkled tutu
on. Okay, you go, and I'll be there in a second. Let me know when you need me, okay? But we got through it together, and it's funny because we still reminisce about those days, and we laugh about it, of course, and cry about it. I mean, it was tragic because he was destroying this show. That did it need a revamp? It did, but in my opinion, it just needed a redirection. You could have kept it exactly the same. What people didn't understand about the original show is that, because of course it had been hacked down as well from the original, that now Samson and Delilah and Titanic didn't make sense. I was like, how about we just have an excerpt of the movie played before that scene, so that the audience automatically know, oh, now we're watching a reenactment of the movie. Because that's what Jubilee was based on, all old MGM movies. But nobody knew that. I mean, what an idea to just tell people that this is what they're watching, is like old movies. And then, of course, yes, of course, some new choreography wouldn't have gone amiss. Maybe a taken out a scene and put in a new movie. So it's still like the movie theme. But you didn't need to spend, you didn't need to pay Frank Gadson $4 million to completely hack at the show with this, the most stupidest storyline that I have ever heard of before in my life, and try and make it work by just like shoving, you know, square pegs into round holes and thinking, great, done. My job here is done. Pat on the back. I've done it.
We've now
updated this. And again, like I say, even his storytelling was just so bad, and his direction was so bad, because then it got lost, because he wanted to keep like the Gershwin section and like other sections from later on in the show. So, but he just sort of added them on. Top Hat was still there, but he just sort of was like, well, here's Top Hat because I don't want to get rid of that. Red Fans are staying because I like it. So now all of a sudden these numbers are in there that have no part of the Miss Jubilee storyline. Okay, can you give me just 1 second?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I'll be right back. I'm sorry.
No problem. So I want to jump to, because I know you did the show, you did Vegas, right? You did other shows after Jubilee. Did a lot of people exit? Because I know there's probably a lot of really talented dancers and not a lot of work opportunity.
Yes. So, and a lot of people did exit after Frank, after that contract, actually the same contract that I left. So I went on to Vegas the Show, which at the time, I mean, it's before Dita opened up Vegas the Show, if you wanted to see Showgirls, was it. And of course, you know, showgirl people wouldn't say that Vegas the Show is a showgirl show. They just have two elements, like the opening and finale. There's like an homage to the showgirl, because the Vegas the Show is the history of Vegas, and so there's just homages to the showgirl, so it can't be classified. Well, I mean, yeah, that's for showgirls, but so that was the closest thing. I did Zombie Burlesque, and then I left those, and then had Bella. And then, which led me to COVID and Fantasy. And then after Fantasy, I had Finley. And now it's Dita. Wow. So,
can you tell about that too? Because I don't know. I think I might have heard rumor before that it might be coming. Like, was there a buzz in Vegas that this was coming, or was it just surprise?
It was kind of surprise. So I didn't even know about the original audition. I would have auditioned had I known about it. I don't even know where they advertised for the Dita audition, but I didn't know about it. Again, I was kind of still like in my baby like era. So I wasn't really like paying close attention to things, but that audition did kind of come out of nowhere. And then, but of course there was a lot of excitement when they had cast it, and they were auditioning and stuff. And then, and because Johnny Katz had written about it, she's playing dress up. Oh my!
Bella's coming out with all different costumes, so you can tell she's been influenced by some beautiful sparkle. That's beautiful, Bella.
She says you look beautiful. Yeah, that's your Rapunzel.
I love
hat.
Your long, beautiful Rapunzel braid.
So I know you're so cute. So yeah, it was but yeah, so Johnny Katz then wrote, and he said of course that they were using some Jubilee sets and costumes and stuff. So then, of course, we're all like, what are they going to use? What Jubilee stuff are they going to use? And it was all like, that's when the hubbub started, because we were all very excited and, you know, like trying to think what it is that they were using.
Yeah. So I've heard those were like in boxes and people didn't know kind of like what's in the basement, what's still on the premises. Like, I think there was a mystery. And when I go to Bally's, you could see in the glass cases, a few of those costumes still there. We could look at them, but like, where are the rest of these? It's like this mystery. So what was the audition like? Was it showgirl? Was it burlesque? Or was she specific of, or who were they who was putting it together, of some people did some style, some did the others? Or are you expected to do all of it?
To do all of it, yes. So the audition, our audition was a showgirl number, which is opening. And we did Red Fans, which is called Josephine Baker, which is like a Latino number. We did what we would call top hat. We would call top hat, but we call it tux, but top hat, which is, you know, in the tuxedos, which is like a very sharp, stylized top hat kind of number. And then, is that it? Yeah, three numbers we learned for the audition. And then the callback was we just added on to the top hat number and the opening showgirl number. So yeah, it's definitely expected to be a well-rounded dancer, not just a showgirl.
Yeah. What was it? Because you've worn those costumes and it's like, it's body memory. How was that? Did you ever, because I know Sarah Sutter, who I love interviewing, like she was talking about some industrial she did that she would pull out a costume and her name was still in the G-string or the bra. Yes. So like, did you wear any of the costumes that you wore before?
So again,
not necessarily your own personal, but at least the same costume.
Right. So after, oh, I don't know. Let's not play with that though, because that's glass. Uh-oh, that is broken. Oops. I'm sorry. So again, yeah, same with Sarah. I've done industrials and gigs with Diane where we'd be wearing the a lot of the time the pink and orange. That's definitely like one of the favorite costumes mm-hmm. from Jubilee. So and yes, at the beginning when I was called back in to do industrials, I had worn some of my old, like my old G-string, but now going back in, like I'm wearing one of my like best friends, like Elise, I'm wearing her G-string. I'm wearing like parts of other people's, but
that's cool.
So bearing in mind, I left the show 2014, the show stayed open for another 2 years after I had left. So I wasn't really ever expecting them to still have any of my costumes, but we go to do my top hat fitting and my top hat is my costume.
Oh my gosh.
And
wow.
That moment was just like, mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. Just my jaw dropped. Like we were all, me, Jose and Jesse were just standing there like, completely shocked that they had never given my costume to anybody else, even wow. You know, with the show running another 2 years post me leaving, so I have my original costume, which is just so strange, which is also actually funny enough, that costume was actually the first costume that I had worn for my in my Jubilee fitting. Top hat was the first costume that they fit us in, which is weird, but
it's interesting too, because people that do musical theater, you might wear your costume for a month or two. It's different. Like you don't have the same emotional attachment to something you've worn for a year or two. Exactly. Every night, two shows, like this is my costume. So I think people that do these long running shows have a very different attachment to their costumes than those who, like if I saw my costume for South Pacific, I'd be like, oh, it would not faze me a bit. But if I did do a showgirl road trip and Karen Burns has our Hello Hollywood Hello costumes and she pulled some stuff out. I didn't see my own, but it was just like, I remember putting this on, like the whole process of layering when you put your jewels, there's a whole ritual in our body of putting those costumes on that I think you only get it if you've done it night after night and all the photos that are taken in it. Like this is part of me.
Yes, exactly. I know. It's just so magical. And the day that I went in for my costume fitting, like, you know, I took the back way. I think Jose had even said, hey, do you want me to meet you at the front of the theater? And I was like, no, I'm gonna I'm going to go around the back. I have to do this. And so, you know, going down the ramp and punching in the door code. And then as soon as I walked into the theater, I just started crying.
Oh, I bet.
Just started crying. Gosh. I was like, oh my God, I'm here. It was like, oh, so magical.
What was the process like of like rehearsals? Because this style of dance is different. I know, do you have showgirl numbers? I'm going to get to see this. I've only seen videos, but you do have showgirl numbers in the
exactly.
show, right?
Okay. Opening and finale are the showgirl numbers. So opening is in the pink and orange, and then finale is in the Bob Mackie jewel box. Okay. And then, so, okay. And so, and then, yes, it's other than that, there's just, you know, a mix of other different styles. It's a very, honestly, I love the show.
This one.
Oh, sorry.
Because
I
wanted that pretty one.
I see. Oh, this one.
Bella's
pretty.
Doing dress up this whole time. This has been amazing background beauty to see her putting on her tiara and her sparkles and her tutu. And
oh, this doesn't fit this one, honey. I'm sorry, darling. It doesn't fit on this, but this one does. I know.
I don't want that one.
You don't want it? Okay. This one doesn't fit, though. You have to find a different headband, okay? So yes, it's a very diverse mix of dance styles, which I love. Mm-hmm. I love all the numbers. There's point in it. There's, you know, classic jazz, I guess you would describe it as. There's like Latino numbers. So it's a really great diverse mix. And now, and when I actually went to see Dita on the Friends and Family on the opening night, my first impressions were it was so wonderful to see how the old Jubilee stuff that was very, very expensive costumes and sets actually worked harmoniously against the Dita Von Teese new costumes and sets, because her stuff is beautiful and together it works. And honestly, if you hadn't seen, if you know nothing, I don't think anybody would go in to watch the show and think that they had come, that, you know, this stuff is like vintage old, like from the 80s, and that they weren't all made for the same show.
Well, her champagne glass and her yes. Definitely very classic, like everything about her hair, her makeup, and just like, of course exactly. She would wear that.
So it's harmonious. And aesthetically pleasing. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. They made a new proscenium arch for the front of the theater, and it looks, everything just looks great. And I was just visually.
Oh, now she's got a gold crown. Look at you. You've got your own show.
So, yeah, just aesthetically is stunning. And I was so pleased to see, of course, the costumes, the sets being used, being utilized in a beautiful, respectful way, to the showgirl, to burlesque it, and everything is harmonious and it's beautiful.
I loved her interview too, talking about burlesque, the difference in how people confuse burlesque and vaudeville, or burlesque and cabaret. Like, there is a lot of overlap with things, but like, I just think people can take their time to learn a little bit of the history of things and represent both on the same stage. I'm actually really intrigued, because I really loved her interview of just her respect for the showgirl and her research. Like, she started listening to my podcast because Bob Mackie was interviewed. And so I'm like, I love that you're actually hungry to learn this. And the questions that she's asking, and her reverence is just like, it should be in her hands.
Yes. Exactly. I'm just sad that it didn't happen in 2014, 10 years ago. But yeah, she's very respectful. I mean, and her style is gorgeous. And again, same thing. I was so pleased to see as well that she has stayed true to herself, and it is a burlesque show. Mm-hmm. And that she hasn't felt the pressure to try and turn it into anything that it's not. It's a burlesque show. Of course there are these showgirl elements with opening and finale and stuff, but it is a burlesque show, and I was really happy to see that it is still a burlesque show. And the cast is great, the choreography is fantastic, the And yeah, I was just really blown away by it. And then working with her as well is just like another level of respect, because mm-hmm. she has so much respect, and she doesn't want to like hurt anybody's feelings. She doesn't want any like this negativity from any past Showgirl or Jubilee cast member. She just wants to do it right. And I really love that about her. And she's just, yeah, a really great person to work for and with. Mm. And yeah, I know. So cool.
That's so good to hear, because I think you said something really important. She wasn't trying to make it a Showgirl show, because the people that have said negative things, I think they thought they were going to see Jubilee.
Exactly.
And that's not the thing. It's like, that's this is different with a beautiful homage to that. But
exactly.
A lot of people have come and loved it. But I think...
Yes,
I think people, there's a mindset, like I know going to see the Moulin Rouge in Paris and Lido, some were like, this is how it's supposed to be and this is not. And we talked before we recorded that it's supposed to progress.
Yes.
And also want to get to Follies, because there is both happening in Vegas right now of this homage to the Showgirl.
Yes.
And I'm moving forward. And you're living in both worlds at the same time. That's why I was so intrigued to talk to you, because you're going from one theater and you've got this history of burlesque and Showgirl that's moved forward, and then the show Follies is timely with the Tropicana coming down and the last of those show theaters, those show houses coming down and the sadness, but in the middle of that there's still things being created, doing it respectfully. And I would love to know about the Follies thing too, because you're, I don't know if you're heading towards a musical theater world when this comes along, but it's like, what a gift at the same time.
Yes, I know. Again, like I say, I'm literally the luckiest person in the world. I really feel like the luckiest person in the world. But I actually went to a party, and I brought with me two of my cast members from Dita. I went to the Drop the Trop party on Monday night, because it was probably potentially like the last time I'll be there as well myself. And so, you know, we went all vintage glam, and it was a really good time. But of course, Follies, we were kind of trying to get it in that theater, but the Tropicana you know, are like, you know, they were like, no, XO, no, we want to close April 2nd and that's it. But it's such a shame, because that's kind of a loss, because it would have been like perfect.
Oh my gosh, it would have been a send off and a,
I mean, imagine to do it there. But alas, it wasn't to be. So we'll see. But you know, Aliante is still going to be great there as well. So obviously a little off the beaten path, but you know, people are excited about it. So people are going to be traveling up to Aliante to come check it out. So, and if you haven't got your tickets yet, get them.
They're going. I got mine as soon as I found out. I'm coming on the 12th. So not opening. But I get to go to the cast party, and I'm so excited. Yeah. And I have some gowns that a friend of mine just gave me this box of gowns. I'm like, where am I? Oh, I know where I'm going to wear this.
Yes.
Where else am I going to wear this? Obviously. And it's vintage. And there's like the excitement of dressing up for theater, because I interview these gals. They're now in their 80s. They talk about Vegas, especially when the mob was there, and the celebrities, like, you know, Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra, like people dressed up, and you would see Sparkle and Rhinestone and tuxedos. And now people show up and they're jeans, which I guess, you know, be comfortable. But I go, I love that the feeling of Follies and Dita's gives me an excuse to go, no, I'm going to wear uncomfortable shoes and cry. I don't care. I'm going to love the fact that it's worth going out and dressing up to see something classy again.
Yes. And they do. People come dressed up to the nines to come and see Dita. And it's just so nice to see that again, especially at Vegas, the show, because that theater is in the Miracle Mile shopping mall. So you didn't see anybody dressed up to come and see that show. Everybody was just in like shorts, flip-flops, t-shirts, like really, you know, it's not. So to be back in this space with a Dita crowd, which are all like these glamazons, that they're just all like vintage, they've got their victory like curls in, like everybody's dressed to the nines, and it's just such a great thing to see from the other side of stage.
Oh yeah,
thank you for making effort to come see us. So yeah, her audiences that she draw in is fantastic, and it's been really great houses too. Like, it's been really, the ticket sales have been doing very well. But yes, yeah, so, and yes, Follies, same thing. I know that everybody's going to be, and you know, the hubbub about it in town, like everybody is excited about it. Of course, because it is, again, another homage to the Showgirl. Will Vegas ever have another Showgirl show, like an actual Showgirl show? I don't know. I don't know. But right now, these, what we have, and with Dita, it's a perfect homage to it.
Oh, yeah. What was it like for you? Because I've only interviewed, you're the youngest one I've interviewed. Most of them are, I think 75 is the youngest, and then Anna Bailey, who's 97. Yeah. Like, what is it like? Do you rehearse together? Or are you all in very separate scenes? Like, what is that like to come in and like have this range of professionalism?
We have worked together. So for the number Mirror Mirror, it's a big production number. So we actually had us all together in the studio the other day. So which was, you know, a lot of people, a lot of moving parts. And like any production numbers where there's layers of like action happening. So, you know, it's crazy. But our incredible choreographer, Sarah LeClair, I don't know if you're going to have a chance to talk to
her. I would like to. I keep hearing how good the older ladies are loving working with her.
Yeah, Sarah's amazing. And she has the patience of like a judge, and she is just killing it and doing such a great job. I'm so proud of her. She's wonderful. She's a wonderful human, and she's a wonderful choreographer and a beautiful dancer as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they couldn't have picked a better person to do this. And she is, you know, getting back into the studio with these ladies, I know that she's just loved it, because it's just been like a different, you know, obviously a much slower speed, but to be able to feed back to them what they would have taught her, you know, years ago, you know, like this full circle. It's just a full circle. And so, and we have these solo moments, because of course us younger dancers are playing the ghosts of their, you know, their younger selves. So, you know, Ramona, my co-partner, you know, we have this like solo moment where she's dancing and I'm just like dancing off of her shoulder as her solo. And it's like, and she, you know, she's stressed about the choreography. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about the choreography. You can even re-choreograph it. You can do whatever you want to do. My job is to do what you're doing, because I am your ghost. So whatever you want to do, you want to do a high kick, you do that. But it's actually a really beautiful thing as well to work with these ladies, because, you know, we're going to get so much from them. We're going to get so much from each other. And I know that they're really enjoying the experience, as are we. Actually, Finney's just totally woken up. Do you mind if I go grab him?
Sure. I'm going to give you one question to answer. So that'd be great while you're holding your baby.
But the babes. Okay, I'll be right back.
Yeah. Hello. Oh my gosh. Hello. It's like, what did I just wake up to?
He's like, what's going on? Hey, I know. We want to say hiya. Yeah, she feels I probably should take his sweater off, because it's not actually that cold at all. Oh wow, Bella's like pulled out all of her like costumes. She's having a pile of costumes.
I had the best costume box in the neighborhood, because it was not much of mine, but that's where all the kids wanted to be. And I'm like, what it does for their imagination, and it's just so fun, like to pretend, and like just, and I'm sure for them to get to see you on stage and be like, oh my gosh, how do I they have the bar is very high.
I'm going to totally whack my boob out and breastfeed too.
No, go for it.
it's also still happening.
This is like really fun to see in the context of all the stuff going on. So to finish with, I guess I just want to ask what it's been like for your soul, because you're living this really interesting life. You've got two kids, you're married, you're kind of settled, but you're getting to two shows at once that are really beautiful tributes to the careers that a lot of us are now thinking are just gone, and you're getting to live in both. And as a mom, and so I don't know, there's something of the juxtaposition of you nursing right now too, is like you got to dance way further into your years than a lot of people did.
Yes.
And you got to see the change of Vegas. You went through Jubilee, different variations, and COVID, and like the life of a dancer, and then like that you're still going, and you got two things at once.
I know. I mean, what can you say about that? It's incredible. Like, And especially all of my Jubilee cast members, ex-cast members that have reached out to me since, just been like, you know, they can't believe I'm back in there. And it's like, apart from just being feeling so grateful, so honored that they picked me, of all of the people that Dita and the team could have picked, they picked me. I know that so many people auditioned. So many people wanted to be a part of this experience, and somehow I got picked. So what are you doing? So it's like, what, honestly, I am blown away. I'm honored. I'm so grateful. I'm so lucky. And I definitely am not taking it for granted. And every time I step on that stage, especially as well, like, this is going to be emotional. So sorry. So my yes, that looks perfect, Bella. So my opening night, of course, we have lost people, you know, since, like, people that I have worked with, dresses, we've lost dresses, you know, that have passed away since Jubilee closed. And actually last year, or so 22, we actually lost Brian Tucker, who was a good friend of mine who worked up in the fly rail. And I used to, I'm sorry, that's Finley pressing buttons. I used to go up and hang out in the fly rail with all the boys up there in between shows, and just, like, you know, chat with them and, like, hang out with them and stuff. And unfortunately, Brian passed away, 22. So my opening night of Dita, right? Like, I honored Brian, and I dedicated my show to him. So it's just what a crazy life it is that I lead. And I am so lucky, and I have these two incredible children that, you know, I could have stopped right here, but yeah, I'm so lucky to be able to get back on and do it, even within my age. I mean, I'm aging myself, but I mean, you know, I still feel good. I'm fortunately without injury, and
this is fun. Her son is pulling the headphones out of her ears, and she's just, it's like, this is how, yeah, you just keep going.
Oh wow. And it's beautiful.
I'm really, really happy for you. I'm really glad that you said yes to this, because talking to some of these older gals, like, I said, what is it like when you first put your heels on? And, like, when you imagine what it's going to be like to step back on the stage, and they get emotional. And I think it's validating. A lot of us didn't know it was our last show. We just ended for whatever reasons. Like, if we could do it one more time and really be present. Like, when I went to Paris for the reunion, we had a dance class on the Lido stage, and we all cried because we had forgotten. Like, I'm still dancing, I'm still teaching, but not on a stage. And to walk down the staircase, and everybody, that feeling of what it's like to walk down the staircase and have the lights on you. I think if everybody could have the gift of just getting to do it one more time, even if all you did was stand there. I think is, and then you, and I'm excited to see, like, your first show with Dita is going to feel very different from Follies, because the context and the history on both of them. And so, like, I love that you get to experience both.
Yes.
And I'm going to be there to celebrate this in a month, and I won't see you in Dita show, but I will know that you were on that stage, and then I'll see Follies. And I think it's just this, I'm so excited for this trip, because I'm so glad that there's a lot of thought and heart going into these shows.
Yes, that is.
In a way that it should have been, that maybe would have kept things from closing if someone had kept integrity and the heart behind it.
100%.
And so it's kind of a miracle that it's happening. And so, yeah, we'll be all applauding, all Bluebells and everybody around the world will be clapping for this opportunity for you. So you get your ears pulled out of your head.
Right. I know. I'm like, ugh. But as long as everybody knows that too, because I know, like we had said, like, you know, a lot of Bluebells around the world, or you know, older showgirls that have come to see it, that are, you know, they don't, they think it should have been one way, they think it should have been a showgirl show, but as long as they know that it was never intended to be a showgirl show, and just an homage, and it is a burlesque show, and that everything is done with the deepest respect and integrity, and that they have done their—
Nope, we lost you for a minute. Your microphone was pulled out.
I'm sorry. I swear.
If you all can see this wonderful juggling act she's doing and still keeping your voice, it's so good. He's got a big smile on his face. Like, yep, I got those headphones out of her ear.
He's so cheeky. So we say hiya. Hiya.
Hello. And I know what a lot of us will be saying. It was just like, enjoy every second, because mostly what people that were old, I think, because we just thought it was going to go on forever. You have a very different perspective. For us, we just thought, well, I can take a break. I can come back. We just thought these shows would go on forever. And almost everybody says, I wish I had been more present while I was on stage, especially when I knew when it was my last ones, I didn't know it was my last one. So I know you already get it. So yeah, just like soak it up and enjoy it and like live on that stage for the rest of us. And yeah, what a gift.
I know. What a gift. I know. I'm so lucky. How lucky. How did I get this lucky?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Just, and any photos you want to send, it'd be so fun to see your Jubilee, Follies, Dita, all those other things. Cause you've got such a history in your photo albums, you know? So.
Right. Yeah, I will. I'll send you a whole bunch. Oh.
Well, now somebody else has the headphones in.
Yeah.
Well, I will let you go. And I can't believe that they hung in there that long. We had talent show, costume parade. We had all the stuff during this. And you just kept on going. That is the life of a performer. Like, okay, the stage is coming apart. Somebody just fell down the stairs. I just keep smiling.
We just keep smiling, don't we?
So Becca, thank you so much. This was a definitely like such an honor to get to hear your story, and then for other people to get to hear your perspective on so many different variations of the same thing. So
yes. Mwah.
Thank you. Take care. Bye. Thanks for sharing your adorable children.
Bye, yeah. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.